Hi, everybody. I'm Fetsum, and you are listening to the Piece by Piece podcast. Together with my brother Teddy, we talk to scientists, artists, entrepreneurs, visionaries, politicians, athletes, movers and shakers about future skills. We talk about their skills and try to elicit the secrets of their future skills. The goal is to gain valuable suggestions, how-tos for the youngest in our society. The topic of future skills is largely aligned with the skills needed in the working world of the near future. We are moving into a time in which lifelong learning is necessary. Biographies are no longer stringent as our world is changing rapidly. That's why we're looking forward to today's future skill, empathy, and our expert from whom we'll hear valuable insights.
Empathy. Empathy is more than merely liking someone or being kind because you're a good person. Empathy is the ability to understand and share another person's experiences and emotions. To be truly empathetic requires that we are clear about our own motives, fears, and desires. We have the resilience and courage to feel negative emotions, our own and someone else. And we have had enough honest, authentic experiences to be able to relate to others. One of the most important things parents can do for children is help them develop empathy.
She's a cultural mediator and interpreter. She's a human rights activist and defender. She's a professionally trained search and rescue swimmer who has saved hundreds of lives in the Mediterranean Sea. She's a sought-after international speaker and panelist, winner of the prestigious German Bambi Award, a young Arab Muslim woman who had to flee from her war-torn country. She's nothing short of an exceptional and remarkable human being. Dear listeners, please welcome our guest, Sara Mardini.
Tell us how you're doing right now and how's the situation? How are you? Just simple.
This is a very, very common question recently. I get asked a thousand times, even if I blink, now I have ever, okay, how are you? Which is thankfully, I'm grateful for that, of course. I have the strongest support system that any humanitarian activist, to be honest, to be surrounded by friends, family, and as I said, the queer community in Berlin. I'm healing, to be honest. I'm not going to tell you, wow, I'm good and I'm perfect. No. My body endured a lot of trauma recently and a lot of stress. And even now it's appearing on side effects. For example, I don't know if people know, but like my toes are actually like this because of the stress, how my feet were like holding together. And I might have to do surgery. Imagine like, because I was enduring too much and I wasn't paying attention. I closed the door on myself, to be honest, as well. I refused to see family and friends because I couldn't really see how heavy it was on them already. And I'm the person who always brings joy and happiness. And it was really, really difficult recently. As I said, I cried so much every day. It was just heavy on the heart to understand what's going on. I think it's just too much sadness to me. But then later when they said that I'm not allowed to go and testify and defend myself, it turned into anger. And you know what anger does. I have like a full body energy now because of this anger. I'm trying my best to channel it in the best way. Not all the time works. And still, you can see it's appeared on me, and I lost plenty of weight. Like, I think from how you met me first time as well, like till now for these past 3 years. But grateful, strong, stronger than ever. And I'm very grateful that I'm coming out of like a really, really dark mental period of my life. I suffered really heavy depression the last 3 years. So coming back, let's call it that way, and looking to the future, to be honest. I'm done waiting. I don't really care what the outcome is going to come anymore because I have a life and I deserve to live it, so I'm going to go for it.
Oh, Sara, that's usually you think like you're asking an easy question, but it comes really like,
yeah,
like a heavy way back. But in your case, I mean, we feel it from the very first second on, and of course, we've been watching
absolutely
everything lately. And just coming on that, what happens lately, because you've been in the news very much, because of the trial against you and the 23 other defendants. Can you tell us what is it about and which charges are you facing at the moment? Just briefly for some of the people who have noted what happened to you lately.
So basically me and myself and other 23 people were accused of money laundering, espionage, trafficking, smuggling, being part of criminal organization and fraud. And forget all of those, by myself, I'm a threat to the national security. Wow. I think that's the best thing someone ever said to someone. So to make it very clear, it's not about me or these 23 people. The police department or the Greek government, when they arrested us, they didn't know I was Sara Mardin. They didn't know there was Sean Binder or Nassos or et cetera, et cetera. It was more a kind of act to plant fear in the activists' hearts, activists such as me and other people who were there. We were not activists even there. We were volunteers. We were called activists after we were released. We were volunteers who were social rescue swimmers, we were teachers, we were doctors, we were nurses, completely like normal people. We don't learn or train anything extra before we go there. We're just people who had a little bit of money saved on the side and they volunteer, and we volunteer with our time. And what we do in my NGO, we used to do, I'm a social rescue swimmer, so I'm trained lifeguard, professional trained lifeguard. So what we were doing is basically scan the sea every night for 3 years nonstop. We make sure that no one is drowning in the sea. And then when we find someone in the water or a dinghy of refugees, we call the police or the Coast Guard, and then we take care of the people. Basically, if someone is drowning, we take them out of the water. When they arrive on the land, if they need a blanket, water, we give them nice word, make someone day better, because at the end of the day, these people who their lives completely changed from dying to actually make it to a land. Mm-hmm. Being a good, just like a welcome person for someone in distress. And if they need a medical care, we used to have our own medical team. We had a whole system on the shoreline, how it was organized. And doing so, we were detained and we were accused of these charges. And the quick background of it, because unfortunately the EU failed to take in refugees and they failed with all the integration courses, there was not enough space. The plan didn't work out, which is completely fine. But instead of researching to make a better plan, they decided to close the borders. And they believe that people are still encouraged of crossing because people like me and the organizations still exist on the borders to fill up the gaps of the government or of the political parties or whatever is supposed to happen. So they believe that people come because we are there, which is very stupid, because when I came in 2015, I didn't even know there would be someone rescuing us in the water. Mm. I said it before and I say it again, people do not put themselves or their kids or their loved ones on a dinghy because there is another volunteer or another Sara on the shore giving them water and blanket. This is discriminating, and this is so disrespectful in so many ways. People get on the dinghy because that was the last hope they have. And that was the last hope I had back then. That's why I put myself and my sister on a dinghy. So that's the whole picture of why we got arrested and why this is happening. And unfortunately, there's over 150 cases all around the EU like this. But also the constitution changed from one country to another. So in Germany, if I see someone in a car accident and I don't help them, I get detained. But in Greece, if you see someone and you help them, but of course that depends because you're migrant and non-migrant, which here brings us to no human rights equality. So yeah, there's so many windows for so many cons, and we were closing up for so many years. And now they don't want us around, so they scare us off. And unfortunately, it worked. There's no search and rescue teams on the island of Lesbos since 3 years now.
Sara, the topics are so huge, you know, we don't even know where to take it. Maybe to all of our listeners also, who haven't heard your name so far, you're from Syria, you and your family. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about where in Syria you're from and how your childhood was like?
I'm from Damascus, Syria, and it's the capital. And I'm 26 years old. When everything started, I was just 23. I left Syria when I was 20 with my sister, who is not Yusra Mardini, who's Olympic swimmer now in the refugee Olympic team. And she was 17 back then. And my parents also followed after a couple months, did the same journey. We didn't do any family reunion. And we are an athletic family. We are swimmers since I don't want to say it's birth because it's a bit exaggerating, but close. You know, like my sister, she swam before she walked. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds very crazy, but my dad was swimming coach and still a swimming coach. And all my uncles and cousins, it's like a family legacy. So we were born into it. I didn't really choose to be a swimmer or not. And I hated it my whole life until I quit. I realized how much I loved it. And we had a very, very normal life like any German family has here. Yeah. There's nothing different than what you have in here. I'm not criticizing the German society, but I will add more that we grew up around more sun and more kindness, and people were more open to each other than now. I don't know, maybe if in Syria this changed now, But I just feel like since I got here, a lot changed. You know, when you smile for a child in the street, everybody's like scared because like, oh my God, why is she looking at kids and whatever. And I just feel like the society is getting closed and closed, and it's not what I grew up on. I grew up in a very warm country and very educated. I went to law school, but I didn't graduate. I have an issue with graduating in a way. And I worked as a swimming coach in Syria. I started actually volunteering as a lifeguard and a swimming coaching when I was 12.
Elaborate on that, because I find it very, very interesting that you are a rescue swimmer and your sister too. But how did you learn it? Like you already mentioned your father.
Yeah. We're just, it's a family legacy.
Swimming, yeah.
Like, yeah, it was just, we were born to it. Like, I don't think I ever remember that my dad told me, do you want to be a swimmer? As long as I remember, I had a memory, I was a swimmer. Wow. From a very young age, we had a complete different life from everyone else. I think me and my sister, we start dating and wear makeup and fixing our hair on the age of like 19, 20. And people think like, we always like, we're super busy with the swimming pool. And I think this is something that was really beautiful that our father like filled up our life with swimming. And he took it seriously because it was his dream since he was young. So he made sure it became ours. And to be honest, at the end of the day, I mean, what saved our life?
Yes, absolutely. I love this. This is how life comes together sometimes. You don't know.
Exactly.
You don't know why.
Exactly.
You learn something and then all of a sudden you have a situation and you can use it as a tool.
Exactly. Exactly. But to be honest, swimming is something that everybody has to know.
Yes.
This is a necessity, is not. Absolutely. I think everyone should know how to swim because exactly what you say, you don't know where life takes you and you don't know. It's just dangerous not to know how to swim. And if people are scared of water, trust me, you're going to laugh later when you know how to swim.
So swimming is a family legacy. What else is particular about the Mardini family?
Dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad and my uncle were hip-hop dancers, and they moved it to me, and I'm a hardcore underground hip-hop dancer. It's a bit different, but we all like the bass, I think. Yeah, that's about the family. And the biggest heart in the world. We all know famous for that.
Oh, wow.
We put kindness between our eyes and go with it. No matter how hard life gets, no matter how painful people treat us or whatever happened with us, we never change the heart. And that's something I learned from my parents. And also, I grew up in a very equal environment. Even in the Middle East, it was crazy. I wasn't treated as a girl or a boy. I was both. I was never said to me, you're not allowed to do that or you should do that. And my parents really battled a lot for us to be able to swim. In the Middle Eastern culture, I'm not saying it's bad culture, but it's not easy to grow up as a swimmer in the middle of the Middle East. Mm. It's a bit tough. You get a lot of whatever going on. And my parents really believed in us. And my mom, I believed in us. They always told her not to give power to the women, to girls, because they will destroy whatever comes in front of them. And my mom said, well, I will give the power to my daughter and watch what they will be able to do. And exactly. So I'm very lucky with my parents as well.
Fantastic. Amazing. I'm already looking forward to meet your parents.
Yeah, no, next podcast then.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to see them live. We should have a dinner or something.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we should make something. Yeah,
we do this at one point. Sarah, just tell us, how old were you when the political landscape started to change actually back then?
It was 2011. To be honest, those things I don't fully remember anymore, but it was 2011. We left our 20 around 14, 15, when the things started to change back home. Extremely, actually, yeah.
At what point did you know you had to leave the country? Was that immediately already? I guess it was a bit later or something.
Yeah, it was a bit more later because we gave up, to be honest. So what happened in the very beginning in 2011, we lived on the countryside. We didn't live in Damascus. We were 20, 30 minutes drive. And the area was called Daraya. And a lot of people, if they were in the news from the beginning with Syria, they know. That's the area where the government decided that the rubble were hiding. So it was one of the heaviest attacked places at the beginning. And we actually were still staying in our parents' house. Everybody, like all the families, owns their places. We don't have rent place for rent. Everybody owned their houses. So that's what even make it way more difficult because they already spent all your savings on these houses and to build up a family. We went to the swimming pool that day and we came back. And then I remember soldier told my dad, I don't think it's smart to go inside and you have three girls in your car, which is me, Yusra, and I have my youngest sister, Shahed. And Shahed is 14 now and she was such a baby, like just a baby when everything started. And then that was it. We didn't go home ever again. we just went to the swimming pool, and then we were not able to take anything, to be honest. We didn't take anything from home. But then later dad said to us to pick up, like asked us what things we'd like to pick up, and he picked up a couple things for us. That's it. But I don't have, apart from bracelet and a pillow from home, I don't have anything. And then we start living in a rental places. We start renting. And something about the Syrian people, everybody had savings. That's why we could survive when the beginning in the war happened. Everyone have their own savings. It's a tradition that everyone does. And that's what also a lot of people to travel. And also this is a privilege that some people actually had the money to travel, but there's 100 plenty more who doesn't have the money. They're not able to just send themselves or their kids out. And we should not forget about those. And a year follows after a year, and then it's getting worse and worse. Like, the landlords start raising their contracts and they want us to pay more. And some people just kick you out because their cousins or whoever is coming from another city. So it's starting to get really problematic. And it's mentally, we were starting getting affected really badly. And at the end of the day, we had 4 years old child with us. I really get so traumatized every time we she get used to the house, we have to change. And when we realized that we couldn't hold it anymore, that it wasn't even safe to go to school. Sometimes my dad drive us and then we just turn back because there was an attack nearby the school or whatever is going on. And that's when we were just locked at home. We were not able to go anywhere, not swim, not to study. And that's, I think, when we decided to leave, because our basic rights as humans to actually live. And we didn't want to wait, to be honest. We were too young to sit down and wait for the war to finish, because we don't know when this will happen. And some people will be like, oh my God, they're so selfish. But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm not going to wait for a war when I know my future is waiting for me. If I could go and catch it somewhere else, I would do. Yeah. And that's what we did, actually. Yeah.
So it's enormous, Sarah. But tell us a little bit more about what were the most tremendous challenges you had to face also on your way from Syria to Greece, for example?
So there's a big story that also came out back in 2015. It's the reason why we got the Bambi Award, actually. It's where we left Turkey to Greece. Our boat started sinking because normally, which is not, shouldn't be normal. You know, there's boats that you put in the canal in Amsterdam, usually, and just go to have a beer with your friends, even here in the canal. Yeah. So those are the dinghies, and they're even worse. The thing is that we take, we paid 850 each, and that's way, way cheaper than it is right now. Now people pay 10K and 12K and more and more. And
so
we got in a
euros
dinghy.
Euros or dollars?
Euros.
Euros.
It depends on the smuggler,
so
what they decide.
You paid 850 euros each?
Yeah.
And now it's up to 10,000 euros per person.
Yeah. Now it's insane amount of money, because now it's become more dangerous and now it's more illegal than before. So it's more common and people are more desperate. So the smugglers can take what the fuck they want if no one will say no, because at the end of the day, you need them somehow. And I don't know, I have a love-hate relationship for smugglers. This is not to go translate it in a different way, but I don't know if he saved my life or took it away. You know what I mean? Mm. At the end of the day, he helped me get where I wanted to get. And to also say something that unfortunately I saw a lot in the public, for the nationalities of smugglers. Smugglers are from all over the world. They're Syrians, they're Iraqi, they're from Africa, they're from Afghanistan, they're from Pakistan, they might be even from Europe. So that's the thing that I don't want people to also to go. It's unfortunately, everybody's putting people in boxes. And the smuggler could be anyone from anywhere, by the way. There's not specific kind of people are going there.
But let's go back to the challenges we were talking about.
Yes, sorry. So basically, our dinghy would start drowning. And we jumped in the water together with other men. That's the story. People thought that it was just Sarah and Yusuf who pulled the boat. It's not true. Other people joined, everybody who could swim, who can help. And then we made it safely after 3.5 hours. The rest, to be honest, the challenges is meeting people from every border we entered. We, every civil society we entered to welcomed us in a different way. Some people welcomed us with hate speeches. Some people with throwing shoes on you, say, go back where you come from. Some people get out of my borders. I'm I'm just crossing. Can I just go quickly? I really don't want to stay here. I'm really not planning on staying here. But then there's other people, for example, when I first arrived to Vienna in Austria, I cried. I think it was the first time after 25 days that I felt human, that I felt that someone saw me for who I am and saw that I'm not just a number. So yeah, it's the hate that was carried in people's hearts, because they had no clue where we come from, why we came from, where we come from and why we're crossing. And no one bothered looking beyond why we did that. They just decided to hate us because, of course, TV and the newspaper and politics tells you to do so, so you do it.
So the hate was tougher on you than jumping out of a boat and pulling it towards the shores, yeah?
Yeah. Treat me as a number. It was even worse than being on a death journey. Not to see me as a human or as equal as you are.
Yeah, it's wow. It's so many things because it's like really, I mean, you know that in a way I can say like we've been fortunate because we came as refugee kids, as little kids to Germany. But we know by listening to the story of our parents that they had almost the same path and also the whole tragedy on the way, which can happen to everyone. But in a fortunate way, we were just too young to remember any of these difficulties and problems. Maybe a bit like your younger sister you were mentioning, because when I hear your stories, it's like it's just shivering all over my body, to be honest. But only 6 months after your arrival here in Germany, you've decided to join an NGO and help rescue other refugees from drowning. How did you find that strength, actually, and courage to do so? Because it's like, normally you would just say like, hey, I'm here, I'm safe, and I'm going to rest or something. But how did you get the power to go back and support others?
So basically, I was so traumatized to the level that I couldn't swim anymore in the sea. I was so scared from the sea. And I'm a long-distance open water swimmer. So basically, the sea is my second home. So one of the things why I wanted to go back is because I wanted to break the mental circle in my head. Because I wanted to grieve from my past and let it go. So that was the first idea why I wanted to go. And the second, I went there to volunteer for 2 weeks. And then I saw that I'm a social rescue swimmer and I'm an Arabic translator. I can give so much and I'm needed there. I can make someone's life better because, you know, this is my job. I'm a lifeguard. I'm a swimmer. Yeah. And I just wanted to make sure that there is someone who speaks the same language and someone who went through the same, who actually knows exactly what to say to someone else. And even sometimes I don't have to say it just by the look because, like, It's just scary, you know, like I was swimmer myself and I am a swimmer myself and I did it and I got terrified, you know, and I don't know what I thought of. I just felt like I can do it. So why not? I looked behind and I'm like, I just had a German course here to do integration course. And I said, no, I can go. Like, and also being there, it's a life changing experience. You meet people there who leaves literally everything behind and we have our complete lives on hold. You have so much money that you work hard for to come and just volunteer and give literally your 100%. And people there are just coming there to uplift each other. Till now, I would never forget how beautiful it was. And it's sad that people do not understand why people go there. There were so many articles and stories about us that people go there because they don't have a reason to live or we don't know what to do in our lives or to find our love partner or like we're lost in life, we go there to find ourselves. But the people I met there is the most educated already and we're first aid responders, you know? Like, I don't need to tell you more than that. It's like firefighters here. All your life is ticking and you don't rest until you actually, yeah, there's some window to do so. And yeah, I think I found myself at the end of the day. I found that this is where I'm good at and what I love it. And at the end of the day, I can do it. So why not doing it?
As you were mentioning also the point that you said, like, to give maybe at least for a second these people a bit of realizing there's a person caring about them and giving them a heart, not being a number or something. I mean, you can't imagine more than someone is welcoming you with like open hearts and really hears you.
Smile.
Maybe with a smile and on top of it, you speak the language.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, at least there's someone on the other side like who understands my fears, my trauma, everything.
Yeah. I mean, I used to have that when people are arriving like very angry and they look at me like, I was like, oh, I'm also from Syria. I was like, why are you standing here? And I'm like, well, I did mine a couple months ago. And then you can see the face like right away. It's just a bit sad because I'm a bit pissed on so many people who made it and left others behind. It's not about only people who's not migrants, but there is healthy migrants who have so much potential that also they turn their eye. That's something is not fair that we turn their eye on the others, which I advocate for equality. Not gender equality, then the equality will come when we have a human rights equality. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always fight. And that's why I go to these places, even when I worked in Sea-Watch crew on the mission, on the ship. I was talking to one of the African, actually, migrants on the ship. who just came from Libya. And I don't know, I was just talking quickly about something, and I'm like, me and you, same, same. And he looked at me and cried. And I didn't think of it. In Libya, you're not allowed to look in the man eye, other man eye. And then he's like, when I was passing around, a lot of the men were looking at me, and he's like, please don't feel uncomfortable, but trust me, it's been years and years, this man were able to look a woman in the eye, because when you do, you get beat up by the Libyan society. What kind of world we're living in, you know? And we're closing an eye on all of these things. Yeah. It's just crazy. I'm speechless. I've been talking about this for 6 years now.
Yeah.
I don't know what more I should do, you know? But I said, I'm done being peaceful. If I hear more stories, I'm done. I'm going to take the streets. I'm done. I'm going to scream my lungs out.
Sarah, so you were talking about the fact that you are healing, which is a very powerful statement. How has your life been affected by selflessly saving other human beings' lives?
Well, that will sound a bit like complaining, though I never do, but it's painful. In all ways, it's painful. As I said, I suffered from depression. Depression wasn't only coming from the case and what happened. It's coming from feeling hopeless, from repeating myself for so long and no one listening to me. On one of the statements I posted, I said, I've been speaking about this since my foot stepped in Europe. And you didn't listen to me until now. You do listen to me because my life is in danger. I was like, why do you not look at us? And then exactly, I said, you didn't look at me because I'm young, I'm a woman, I'm Arab, and I'm a migrant. That's why no one took me seriously in everything I say. But because like no one is listening, because nothing is changing, it's getting either worse or worse. That's what my life brought to me. But in the same time, also, I'm very grateful. I would never change a part of it. I learned so much and I met the most amazing humans that made me who I am today. So have both sides. Mm.
There are 10 other questions apart from the ones that we thought of popped up in my mind. But just in order to maybe clarify, because a lot of people also don't know your story. And you're still here. You're outside. You're free right now. But you've already have been incarcerated. And you have faced so many trials and tribulations at a young age. Have you ever questioned your own humaneness when you were in jail?
No. Never. Never. That's what made me who I am. I never questioned myself. I did when I was released, mm-hmm. because the whole universe was telling me I'm wrong. And the whole universe was telling me I'm sad and I used to be happier. But no. And then I never did. Because the thing is, to explain it more to people why it's crazy, there's no evidence. We are detained with no evidence, which is itself illegal, you know? They are breaking the law by doing so many things to us. So basically, I said in the past, and I say it again, give me one thing with my fingerprint, my picture, my actual voice, that and prove me that I did it, then I will be completely silenced and go with it. But as long as there is no proof, you have no right to detain me, you have no right to limit my freedoms, because at the end of the day, the human that I am. All this academia and paperwork and whatever they do, put it in water and drink it. Mm. I don't care about it. Mm. So yeah, basically, no, I never do. And I will never will. And I will go back to the borders very soon.
I mean, where did you get all this power? Is this coming from?
It's from the people.
Is this also something you saw from your parents, maybe back home, back in the
years? Yes.
I mean, usually it's like, we feel like sometimes not jumping into the footsteps of our parents, but if we look back,
you take the heart of them.
You take the heart of them and you feel like whatever they have done, even if the circumstances were different, you were looking back and you were proud and they were living something up front of you and act correctly in a way. Is this empathetic way what you learn from your parents?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. My dad and my mom been through a lot, to be honest. They've been also questioned all the time in society, as I said. But I told you that whether Mardinis and Aswad, I wanted to say, because in Middle East, women doesn't take the name of her husband. So yeah, I saw how my dad, like for example, when he was teaching swimming, he made champions, like he made so many of them. And then because he wasn't high enough in the team or in the Syrian municipality or whatever for swimming, they used to always take the best swimmers from him and give it to other teams. Mm-hmm. And what did my dad do? He brought a younger generation and made them as champions. Mm-hmm. And they do it again. And then he brought another ones and do it again. My mom, she wasn't allowed to study because, of course, culture, blah, blah, blah. And then when I was studying my, like the ninth grade, which is like the last grade, she was studying with me. She was working so hard. She was raising her kids. And the fact, to be honest, it also comes, the biggest thing is for my dad, because he wasn't washed by the society and what the society brought. A woman and a girl is allowed to do exactly the same like everyone else. My mom didn't even know how to swim when she met my father, and she became a swimming coach and lifeguard. Wow. So he gave us the biggest hand of like, go do whatever you want. The land is not your limit. The sky is maybe. But at the end of the day, and also I believe in God and I believe in kindness. That's what I see. And I believe in giving at least 5 seconds of my time and giving attention to someone who's not seen. I make the invisible visible, because I believe everybody deserves a spotlight, even for 5 seconds a day. When you make this person seen, they look back at you and look in your eyes. That's all I need. It just makes me happy.
After all these years of following through, dear Sarah, we can really say you are a big inspiration for us and millions of others. Your resilience is dazzling and your persistence is beyond measure, really. I mean, we can talk for hours with you, and we will continue to talk definitely. But maybe at the end, you can give us maybe a bit of a tip for everyone at home and advice. How can we encourage or enable empathy in the next generation? Would you have any idea to an easy step to do?
Yes, so? I definitely do. Research and thinking. Stop giving the kids, stop giving them books all the time, and stop giving them ideas or opinion about how it should be or what will be. Leave them to nature. Let the kids connect to nature. And for all of us, please stop copying and listening and watching. Think before you do anything. Because I'm self-taught and self-made woman. Since I left Syria, I know everything by myself because I learned and lived by experience. I go and I do the things with my own hands. And I get my own feelings. And then when I see things, I translate it the way that it fits with me. And then I let it out. And that's why I'm different, because I'm not affected by the society ideas and everything. All these ads, all these the memes and all these Instagram posters and about how you should be and how you should think and how you should, all of these. And even in the education in the schools, I know this will sound really crazy, but it's been there for so long. What we are suffering today, it's been there already. We're not going through anything new. Migration, COVID, it's all been there. The first time we have these kind of diseases all around. Migration has been there since, go back to Pakistan and India, from the very beginning when UK decided to divide people between by religion. Just stop pretending that we're, oh my God, we don't know how to deal with it. Honey, it's been there. Just wake up. Mm. It's just different titles. Mm. And people to think. And when you go for the older generation, when you go vote, please, please bother yourself and take 2 days before you decide who you're going to vote to and study that person very well and see what they are capable of, what kind of behaviors they will do when they're empowered. Because we are the reason everything happening to us, because we are giving the power to those idiots to lead us. And every country has their own cute collection of leaders. That's all. And listen to the youth, because trust me, they know a lot.
That's a statement, Sarah.
Yes.
After that, yes. We cannot say much.
So I dropped the mic.
almost.
I dropped the mic.
You just dropped it heavily. Yeah. Listen, Sarah, thank you so much. We would just love to ask you one more question, and maybe you could leave us with some more wisdom. If there was one super future skill you could wish for onto humanity, which one would it be?
Oh, future skill for the humanity. I think I will say it again. Thinking. That people use their brain for real. Mm. Like, trust yourself that you can judge a situation and judge it. Because we need more authentic people. I need to know what you guys think. I don't need to know what they thought. That is what's going to make tomorrow better. If we actually just believe in ourselves a little bit more. And realize that everything we live in is also in our brain sometimes. Our brain is our biggest alliance and enemy. Like, I got better because I just changed the vocabulary around myself. So it's just that I would say, be kind to yourself. Really love yourself, people. And it's not easy. Trust me. Oh, my God. And like, every day I wake up, I'm like, oh, I need to do this again. I did it yesterday. Isn't it enough? And then my skin is like, no. You did it yesterday. You did it today. So do the hard work that you do outside for others. On yourself and blossom from within, and give me your authentic opinion and brain, because I'm tired of seeing more copies. We need new people. We don't need new people. We need just the inner to come out. So how long are we going to keep it inside? It's super cold outside. We need to get warm.
Hey, thank you, Sarah.
Sarah, your angel.
Mic drop.
Thank you.
Mic drop.
It was a pleasure talking to you. And really, please, and we mean it, take care of yourself. Because it's important. By everything you're doing and doing for so many other people, look after yourself. Seriously.
Thank you so much. And I need more people to join me. Join the movement, people.
We're on your site. So hit us up with any idea you're having. We're here in town. Oh. So please, never hesitate to contact us, please.
Yes.
No, I will not. You actually still have the best office. I need to visit again.
All right, then.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.